Welcome to the Sagebrush Trail. Stories of the West, from the frontier to the Yukon. I'm Mardell, reading Delilah of the Snows by Harold Bidloss. Chapter 20, Accessories. Esmond was not at the outpost when the messengers reached it, nor was the corporal there, and it was two troopers to whom the miners delivered the dead lad. This fact, however, appeared to afford Sewell a certain satisfaction, and he and Tomlinson went back with Ingleby through the growing darkness to Ledger's shanty. It was once more raining hard when they reached it, and when Hetty had set a kettle of coffee before them, they sat steaming in the little log-walled room with the door shut. Each of them was aware that there was a good deal to be said, and in all probability, little time in which to say it. But the subject was difficult, and Hetty had cleared the table when Sewell turned to Tomlinson. "There's a plant in this country whose leaves the Indians believe are efficacious in stopping blood," he said. "I wonder if you could tell me where to find it." Tomlinson looked up with evident astonishment. "If there is, I never heard of it," he answered. "I've no use for worrying about any plants just now." Then he glanced round at the faces of the rest, and his eyes rested a moment upon Hetty. "I'm in a tight place, but you don't believe I did the thing."
"Of course not," said Hetty with a little flash in her eyes. "Why don't you answer him, some of you?"
Ingleby would have spoken, but Sewell held up his hand. "I'm not sure you know how tight the place is, Tomlinson. If you'll listen, I'll try to show you." He spoke for 2 or 3 minutes, and even Ingleby, who had long looked up to him as a man of brilliant ability, was a trifle astonished at the acumen which marked every point of the tersely logical exposition. It had apparently left no loophole for doubt as to who killed Trooper Probyn, and once or twice Ledger moved uneasily. There was, however, a little incredulous smile in Hetty's eyes.
"Now," said Sewell incisively, "have you anything to tell us?"
Tomlinson sat, gazing at them stupidly, with the veins on his bronzed forehead swollen and a dusky hue in his face. Ingleby was troubled as he watched him, and Ledger leaned forward in his seat as though in a state of tense expectancy. But still the faint smile flickered in Hetty's eyes. For almost a minute they could hear the wailing of the pines and the rain falling on the roof. Then Tomlinson spoke.
"I fired once at a deer. That's all," he said.
Ingleby was conscious at once of a certain sense of shame and an intense relief, for he recognized the truth in the miner's voice. And Sewell had set out with relentless effectiveness the view the prosecution might be expected to take. The latter laughed as he glanced at Hetty.
"You would not have believed he did it if I had talked for hours," he asked.
"No," said Hetty simply. Sewell made her a little inclination and then turned to the rest with a smile.
"We have only reason to guide us, and we argue clumsily," he said. "Women, we are told, have none. In their case, it apparently isn't necessary. They were made differently. Insight, it seems, goes along with the charity that believes no evil."
It was not evident that Hetty quite understood him, for she sat looking at the fire with hands crossed in her lap, and Sewell turned to Tomlinson.
"I think the boys would believe you as we do, but that, after all, scarcely goes very far. We have Esmond and the corporal to consider, and they are certainly not troubled with instinctive perceptions or any excess of charity. What is more to the purpose, they wouldn't try you here."
Tomlinson made a little forceful gesture.
"Now, if I'd nobody else to think of, I'd stop right where I am, but there's an old woman back there in Oregon who's had trouble with the rest of us, most all she could bear, and half of what I took out of the claim was to go to her. She was just to sit still and be happy and never work any more. I guess it would break her heart if they hung me here in Canada."
He stopped a moment and glanced at Hetty.
"Still, she'd never believe I did it.
She's like you." There was very little on the face of the statement, but a good deal lay behind it, as Hetty apparently realized, for a flush spread across her cheek for a moment and then faded away. Tomlinson turned to the others with a gesture that was merely clumsy now.
"I'm going away, boys, and I want a partner to hold my claim for me. If I leave it without an owner, it falls to the crown. You'd do the square thing by me and a widow woman on a half share, Mr. Sewell."
It was an offer most men would have eagerly closed with. But Sewell shook his head.
"You must ask someone else. It wouldn't do," he said. "I have never taken a dollar I didn't earn. And you see, I would scarcely have tried to show you that you must clear out right away if I had meant to make a profit by your doing so."
Tomlinson smiled a little.
"Is there any man along the Green River who'd believe that of you?"
"There are," said Sewell dryly, "at least a few in other places who would be glad to make the most of the story. In fact, if certain papers got hold of it, I'm not sure I could live it down. That wouldn't matter greatly, only you see, a professional agitator's character doesn't belong to himself alone. Still, you are quite right on one point. You must have a partner now. The agreement could perhaps be upset if it was made after it was known that there was a warrant out for you."
It appeared to all of them that Sewell had thrown away an opportunity for winning what might amount to a competence for life. But he only smiled at Tomlinson, who turned to Ingleby. "Then it has to be you. A half share, and you and Ledger can work the thing between you. Neither of you's going to go back on me."
Ingleby almost gasped, and his face flushed a little. It had seemed quite fitting that the offer should be made to Sewell, but there was no apparent reason why it should be thrust on him. He also saw that Ledger was as little anxious to profit by it as he was himself.
"Do you suppose I would take advantage of your necessity by making a bargain of that kind?" he asked.
Tomlinson made a clumsy gesture.
"You'd have to let your own claim go. A man can't hold two placer claims, and you're on the lead," he said. "I've got to have a partner, and I guess I'm not offering any more than the thing's worth to me."
"He's right in one respect," said Sewell. "There are, of course, men in the valley who would be glad to take the claim on a smaller share, but they're not here now, and Esmond and his troopers may turn up at any minute. Besides, the prospects of your finding gold on the claim you hold are tolerably good."
"I'll be gone in about 5 minutes," said Tomlinson quietly. "If none of you will have the claim, it falls to the crown."
That at least was evident, and Ledger nodded when Ingleby glanced at him.
"A half share is more than you are entitled to, but what you can do for Tomlinson is, as he pointed out, worth something, and you would have to let go your own claim," he said.
"Then I'll offer him $1,000 for a third share, on condition that he takes a 4 months' bill for them. I'll divide the risk and profit with you, Ledger."
Ledger smiled. "It seems to me Tomlinson is taking all the risk there is. If you don't find the money in the mine, it's scarcely likely that you will meet the bill. Still, the notion's a good one. The thing has more genuine look when it's based on value received."
The agreement was drawn up hastily on a scrap of uncleanly paper with Sewell's fountain pen, but he made it hard and fast, while Hetty flitted busily between the shed and the shanty. Then Sewell carefully wiped and put away his pen.
"Do you know where you're going, Tomlinson?" he asked.
"No," said the miner simply. "Hadn't quite thought of that."
"Then if you head south for the settlements, you will certainly be overtaken.
In fact, I'm not sure the corporal will not have sent a man along the trail already. You can't live in the ranges with nothing to eat, and that only leaves Westerhouse. They would never expect you to strike out for there, but if you will listen for 2 minutes, I'll tell you the trail. He was scarcely so long, for time was precious. But though few men unused to the wilderness would have understood or remembered most of what he said, it was quite plain to Tomlinson, who nodded. "Well," he said, "I'll light out when I got the major to record the agreement." They pointed out that this was not exactly necessary and entailed a risk, but Tomlinson was quietly resolute. "I'm going away to save my claim, and I'll make quite sure," he said. "There's an old woman back in Oregon I want the money for. She hasn't any other son. They're all gone but me. Well, I guess I'm ready. The troopers would pick up my trail if I took a horse along." He was scarcely a minute stowing provisions. Hetty thrust upon him inside 2 blankets, which he rolled up and lashed with strips of deer hide to pack upon his back. And he wasted no time in thanks. But when Sewell opened the door, he walked gravely up to the girl and laid both his big hands on the one she held out to him. "I guess I'm not going to worry you any more. It's scarcely likely I'll ever come back," he said. Hetty's face flushed a little, and there was a slight tremor in her voice. "It's all my fault," she said. Tomlinson slowly shook his head. "You couldn't do anything that wasn't just right if you tried, and you'll think of me now and then," he said. "I'm going to remember you while I live." He did not wait for her answer, but turned abruptly away, and Hetty stood still a moment with hot cheeks and misty eyes. Then she moved hastily forward and touched Ingleby's arm as he went out of the door. "There's one of the horses in the swamp. Couldn't you put the pack saddle on him and make a trail down to the ford?" she said. "The troopers couldn't help seeing it. The ground's quite soft." Ingleby laughed. "Of course. It's an inspiration, Hetty." He was some little time catching the horse, and when he reached the commissioner's house, Colthurst was already sitting with a book in front of him. He looked up with a little dry smile when Ingleby came in. "It is after my usual office hours, but I understand from Mr. Sewell that you are anxious I should register you tonight as one of the owners of the claim held by Tomlinson," he asked. "Yes, sir," said Ingleby. "There are 1 or 2 reasons that make it advisable." He fancied there was a very faint twinkle which must have suggested comprehension in Colthurst's eyes, as the latter took up a pen. "Then I think I can make an exception in your case, especially as Tomlinson seems equally anxious, and we will get the business done," he said. There was silence for a minute or two, and they waited with an impatience that was the fiercer because it was suppressed, while Colthurst turned over the papers in front of him and took down a book. There was no sound but the splashing of the rain upon the roof and the snapping of the little stove, but Ingleby felt his nerves tingle as he listened. Colthurst, however, closed the book at last and handed him a paper. "That should meet your requirements, and it will be quite an order for you to carry on the work at the claim should Tomlinson be absent from any cause," he said, and stopping abruptly looked up as though listening. "I fancy you were wise in getting the agreement recorded now. Delays, as you are aware, are apt to be especially dangerous in case of a placer claim." He appeared to busy himself again with his book, but Tomlinson rose suddenly and stood a moment, tense and strung up, with head turned towards the door. As a sound that suggested men and horses splashing in the mire reached them faintly through the rain. Then he stepped forward towards the veranda by which they had entered, but Ingleby seized his arm and pointed towards the other door at the back of the room. He and Sewell knew that one could reach the bush that way through the outbuilt kitchen. Colthurst, who could not see the door from where he sat, looked up from his book for just a moment and did not appear to notice that Tomlinson was no longer in front of him. "I presume there is nothing more I can do for you, and that is apparently Captain Esmond. I think he has some business with me," he said. The hint that he would excuse them was plain enough, even if it went no further, and he drew another bundle of papers towards him. This, no doubt, accounted for the fact that he had failed to notice that while Ledger and Sewell moved towards the veranda, Ingleby slipped out through the other door. Sewell, however, gasped with relief when he saw it swing silently, too. Just then there was a tramp of feet outside, and in another few moments Esmond sprang upon the veranda, splashed with mire and dripping with rain. Two wet troopers appeared behind him, carbines in hand. He stopped them with a little gesture of command, and then striding past Sewell and Ledger into the room, appeared to have some difficulty in restraining himself when he saw only the major there. "You will excuse me for coming in unceremoniously, sir, but I had reasons for believing Tomlinson was here," he said. "He was here," said Colthurst. "In fact, I don't quite understand how it was you didn't meet him going away." "I certainly did not," and Esmond flashed a keen glance at him. "If I had done so, I should naturally not have troubled you about him." Colthurst appeared reflective. "He was here. In fact, I have just done some business for him," he said, and stopped, for one of the troopers cried out, and all could hear a thud of hoofs and the smashing of undergrowth. Colthurst glanced suggestively at Esmond. "That sounds very much like somebody riding through the bush," he said. Esmond certainly wasted no time now in ceremony. He was on the veranda in another moment and shouting to the trooper who led up a horse. They vanished amidst a rustle of trampled fern, and Sewell laughed as he and Ledger turned back towards the shanty. "One could fancy Major Colthurst belonged to the aristocracy some of our friends are pleased to consider played out. But there are at least some signs of intelligence in him," he said. "He is, by the way, I am somewhat proud to claim, a friend of mine, though that is, of course, no compliment to him." "Well," replied Ledger dryly, "it is seldom wise to generalize too freely, which is a mistake we make now and then. After all, it may be a little hard on the major to blame him for being a gentleman. He probably couldn't help it, you see." He had spoken lightly to hide his anxiety, but now he stopped a moment and stood listening intently. A faint sound of splashing and scrambling came up out of the hollow through the rain. "It's not a trail most men would care to ride down in daylight, but they seem to be facing it," he said. "If they caught Ingleby, it would complicate the thing." "It's scarcely likely," said Sewell. "He got away 2 or 3 minutes before they did." "The difficulty is that Ingleby can't ride as you and the troopers can." Sewell touched his shoulder. "Listen," he said, and Ledger heard the roar of the river throb across the dripping pines. "When they get near the ford, the troopers are scarcely likely to hear anything else through that. They would naturally not expect the man they're after to double back for the canyon. If they push on, as they seem to be doing, they should be a good way down the trail by morning." They both laughed at this and were sitting in the shanty half an hour later when Ingleby limped in, smiling and very miry, with his jean jacket badly split.
"Tomlinson got away?" he asked.
"Presumably," said Ledger. "We were almost afraid you hadn't. We haven't seen him. Where are Captain Esmond and his troopers?" Ingleby laughed. "They were riding very recklessly over an infamous trail with my horse in front of them when I last saw them. I was just then behind a tree. The beast I couldn't stop simplified the thing by flinging me off. I hadn't any stirrups, perhaps, fortunately." "They'd catch the horse eventually," said Sewell. "Of course, that is, if they could keep in the saddle long enough, which is far from certain, considering the state of the trail. Then they would naturally fancy that Tomlinson had taken to the range. In fact, I shouldn't wonder if they spent most of tomorrow looking for his trail. Still, there is a question I should like to ask. Why did you worry Tomlinson about that plant?" Sewell took a little packet from his pocket and opened it. There were 1 or 2 pulpy leaves inside it. Those grew on the plant in question, which Tomlinson had never heard of. The Indians used them for stopping blood, he said. I took them from the body of Trooper Proben. There was silence for a little while, and during it the sound of the river came up to them in deep pulsations through the roar of the rain. Then Ledger laughed. I'm afraid Captain Esmond and his troopers will be very wet, he said. He is a capable officer, but such simple-minded persons as Hetty and Ingleby are now and then a match for the wise. Haven't you left somebody out? Asked Ingleby. Major Coldhurst, said Ledger, is of course the gold commissioner, and could not be expected to have any sympathy with such a man as Tomlinson. It would, in fact, be unpardonable to suggest that he could be an accessory. Still, it is perhaps not quite out of the question that people outside the class to which Hetty and Ingleby and I belong should possess a few amiable qualities. You and Ingleby and Hetty, said Sewell reflectively. Ledger looked at him with a little smile. Yes, he said, you heard me quite correctly. It's not worth discussing, but I scarcely think one could place you in quite the same category. Join me next time on the Sagebrush Trail for more Western adventure in Delilah of the Snows by Harold Benlos.